What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the All In Podcast. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined by my guy, Mike Badzik. Mike, how you doing today, man?
Doing great. We are winding down 2 days until opening day. You guys know that's close to my heart. So I've got a little Cabernet in the Pirates glass this evening because I'm a little giddy over opening day, but excited to have a friend of the pod on today.
Yeah, man, we have a very special guest. For those of you watching on YouTube, you can see his lovely face in the top right corner. For those of you listening on audio, we got the man, the myth, the legend, Dave Kluge is back once again. Third time's a charm. How's it going, bro?
Going great, man. I absolutely love being on this show. You guys are so awesome. So I will keep coming back as long as you'll allow me to keep coming back. Always have a blast when I'm here.
Listen, man, you got a free pass to this show. You can just pop up in our show whenever you want, honestly.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny because, you know, like normally, you know, at some point in the week, Eli would text me like, hey, you want to talk about this week or whatever. And he texted me and he was like, hey, Dave wants to come back on the show. And I'm like, I'm thinking football in the end of March. Like, is this what we're going to do? And I'm thinking, wait a second. Dave wants to come on the show. We're letting Dave come on the show because Dave has been one of our best guests and we've appreciated him coming on, but he's hot in the streets right now. Dave, why don't you tell our listeners, the ones who haven't been fortunate enough to hear you on our pod yet, or I'm sure most of them probably follow you now on their own, but why don't you tell everybody what you've been working on, what you're involved with nowadays?
Yeah, I think I got a couple friends from the pod at this point, people that I interact with. Nell, you know, he's up there all the time.
Yeah, Oh, yeah.
Crystal, too, right? Isn't
yeah.
Crystal?
Yep. Just, Crystal, yeah, Crystal, that's his fiance, yep.
Yeah, but no, you guys, it was funny. You know, I put a tweet out saying that I wanted to start getting into podcasting and live streams. And I can't remember which one of you was that reached out, but you guys reached out and you're like, hey, come on the show. And that was the first show I ever did. Yeah. Elijah, I thought it was you. Had a blast, man. And, you know, it's something that I've just kind of been growing with since then. So now I've got my own show that I do on Fridays. We just had a special show earlier today with Matthew Berry.
Flex.
A lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, it's still kind of surreal to me, but yeah, I'm working with football guys now. I'm taking over their YouTube, writing some articles for them. I'm going to have an in-season live stream. And then I'm still over at Fantasy Pros doing the same stuff that I was with a few extra articles in there since the last time we talked.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, we, you know, we're so, I don't want to say proud because we're, you know, we're friends. We're not your parents, but like, it's just crazy. I was, I saw your, you know, because I follow you and I see all your tweets. So it's just like, it's to see all the people interacting with your tweets now versus like when we first met you. And it's just been like night and day and all the people that you're, you know, all the famous people in the fantasy industry that you've had on your show. It's been incredible, man, to see your glow up, man. So I'm just happy for you, bro.
Thank you, man. But, you know, like I said, it started with you guys. So as long as you'll keep allowing me back, I'll keep being here. You guys,
oh, yes. Awesome. Whenever you want.
Absolutely. And thanks for talking football in March, because not a lot of people want to do that. But, you know, there's still a lot going on. We just had free agency and there were some huge moves there. We got the NFL draft coming up. So when I first started in the fantasy sports industry, I was doing baseball. I was doing basketball. I was doing football. And now that I've kind of taken on a larger role, I don't have time for the other sports. So for me, like, football is a 365 day a year thing now.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's funny, like, I'm kind of in that mode right now, like fantasy baseball drafts, just had one last week and, you know, kind of getting in that mode. But now, like, getting ready for this pod and preparing a little bit today, really in the football mode. Like, you get excited for it quickly. You look at some of the moves and the draft stuff coming up. So I'm with you, dude. I'm in football mode now.
Well, James see, Connor is done. You got a new running back in Pittsburgh, Kalen Ballage.
Yeah, well, so we're definitely going to talk about that. But yeah, and my team made some noise recently, so we're going to talk about that as well, and talk about how upset or happy I might be about it. But before we get into all that stuff, guys, make sure you subscribe to the channel if you're watching on our YouTube. If you're listening on the audio platforms, make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button. If you're listening in, make sure you leave reviews, ratings, things like that. All those things help support the podcast. So we appreciate you guys taking time out of your day to come watch us talk about some sports. So let's just kick it off with probably the most, you know, newsworthy thing that happened in the NFL recently. The Dolphins wheeling and dealing in the draft. They first traded back from number 3 to number 12 with the Niners, and then traded back up with my Eagles to the number 6 slot. The Eagles moved back to number 12. So I want to kind of touch on the Niners here, because they've obviously made the biggest, this most significant jump. And rumor has it that they made this jump because they like Mac Jones, the quarterback from Alabama, who on many mocks might have fallen to them at 12, and is the 5th rated QB for most people's big boards and rankings, stuff like that. And the Niners were at his pro day today, not Justin Fields. They sent the – well, they sent the – let me rephrase before someone calls me out. They sent the assistant GM to Fields. They sent John Lynch to Mac Jones. And they're like, oh, well, we're going to go see Fields later. Well, like, you sent John Lynch to Mac Jones. That means something, right, Dave?
You'd think so, yeah. I think Kyle Shanahan was there, too. There was that you know, little three-second clip that was going around all day of Mac Jones overthrowing a receiver, and then cut to Kyle Shanahan, and he's just shaking his head. I mean, this whole time of year, there's so many smoke and mirrors. It's really hard to trust what teams are really thinking. As soon as that trade happened, where the Niners moved up to the 3 spot, everybody in the world was saying Justin Fields, that's their guy. They're a run first team. He's a run first quarterback. You know, overshadowed by all the talk about who was at what pro day today, was Justin Fields running a 4.44. That is the fastest 40 time since RG3. So, I mean, it seems like Justin Fields is just tailor made for this 49ers offense. I don't think this is anything besides smoke and mirrors. Like you said, they had the 12 pick. They probably could have just gotten Mac Jones at 12. So for them to give up 2 future firsts to move up to that 3 pick, you've got to think that they got one of the top 3 quarterbacks in their mind.
Right. And my thing was, you know, to me, even if Mac Jones turned out to be Tom Brady, that would still make zero sense to me that you would move that far up to a guy that's projected to fall to you. And even if you just wanted to be certain, you could have just moved up to 6 or something like that, right? But the Eagles were looking to move back clearly, or interested in moving back. Why would you not just move up to 6? To move all the way up to 3 means you want Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, or Trey Lance. Like, one of those, you want your pick of those 3. Mac Jones just wasn't falling in that range.
Right, and I think maybe the fear could be, the only thing that kind of makes sense in my mind is that Mac Jones, you know, they're saying that he might be a little bit of a project, so maybe there was some fear that the Falcons would take him at 4, and they didn't want to risk losing him to the Falcons, but again, there's so much smoke and mirrors this time of year. But then again, you guys know I'm a Bears fan, and we've seen some crazy stuff happen. The Bears traded up to 2, everyone in the world thought we were getting Deshaun Watson, and then they pull a Mitch Trubisky, so... you know, all these experts and analysts, they act like they got everything figured out. And then by like pick 4 in the draft, nobody knows what's going on.
It's a mess. Well, yeah, you think of Daniel Jones. Remember the Giants pick, like out of nowhere, they draft Daniel Jones. And then a lot of people, you know, it's funny, Max Tillman 2 games into Daniel Jones's career is apologizing on TV because, you know, apparently Daniel Jones was going to be so great. Didn't turn out that way so far. But I think the Niners jumping to 3 says that it has to be Fields, and if it is Mac, you know, I guess I can understand it. You know, if they're planning on keeping Garoppolo there, you know, interesting quote from John Lynch saying, you know, Jimmy likes competition. I can't imagine they keep him around for this competition. And I think if you do that, it has to be Fields, or if Fields goes to the Jets, which it looks like it's going to be Zach Wilson to the Jets, you grab him. But I just can't. I think there's a gap between Fields and the next quarterback, whether that's Trey Lance. I think I would even have Trey Lance there too, but I would have to go Fields there.
And Trey Lance is another guy that, you know, you don't want to really start him year one. He's probably going to do best sitting behind a quarterback. So I don't know. There's a lot of options there at 3, but given the offense that Kyle Shanahan runs, you've just got to assume that they're bringing in Fields, right? I mean, it makes too much sense not to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a quarterback he probably looks at and he's like, that's going to fit perfectly and gets the creative wheels spinning.
Yeah. I like what Tyrone is saying here, though. If that's true, why didn't they go to – they should be hyping up Wilson. Like, just like, oh, yeah, man, right. really hope Wilson drops and just pressure the Jets to make that pick.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about the Dolphins now, who have moved back – who have moved back to the number 6 spot, essentially, after trading with the Eagles. where do we think they're going here? I think it's pretty obvious they move back up so they can still have their choice of Pitts, Chase, and Devontae Smith, right?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, Devonta Smith has been great, but I'm not somebody that gets too big on like the BMI and all that. But I mean, he is a small guy, and we've seen some small guys get hurt in the past. I think Ja'Marr Chase is just the perfect mix of everything that they're looking for. And I mean, it's just, it's a thing of beauty what they're doing in Miami right now. They have 13 picks in the top three rounds over the next 3 years. I mean, they have shuffled this around and just amassed so many premium picks. It's beautiful what they're doing. So I personally am not somebody who's totally sold on Tua yet. He really didn't show me enough as a rookie that I'm totally on board. But the good news is Tua can go out and lay an egg all year. Like, he could just have a terrible 2021 campaign, and they still have enough draft capital going into next year that they can move on from him pretty easily if they want to.
Yeah, and I think it's fair.
Go
ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I agree that it's probably Chase, or even I would put Waddle ahead of Devontae Smith. I agree with the BMI thing. Like, he's so skinny, though, and also, like, he refuses to even get on a scale. So we actually don't even know how skinny he is. Both of these times now, he's refused to get weighed. So we actually don't know. He says 170. I'm guessing that's probably closer to 160 if he doesn't want to say what he is. There's just not really a precedent for guys that skinny making it in the league in an impactful way. So I would probably go with either Waddle or Chase.
Yeah. And I think it's like fair.
Deshaun Jackson is like the only guy that really fits that mold. Like, we haven't seen a really thin guy like that. Johnny Knox was another one, and we saw him get folded in half on a career-ending injury. So it's kind of scary when you're looking at a guy that small getting hit by dudes that can run, you know, 4.5s at 225 pounds.
Right. Yeah, and that's why, and I also think from the Dolphins' perspective here, you want to, at least if you want to find out whether Tua's a guy or not, you want to give him the best opportunity to succeed. So they went to get, they already have Devontae Parker, who we know is a quality receiver. We go get Will Fuller, and now you bring in a guy like Chase, or, you know, really any of these three guys, whoever it ends up being, probably Chase. But, you know, you can't make any excuses for Tua at that point, right? Like, his offensive line isn't going to be bad. It's basically going to be like, hey, man, we've given you the offense. Can you drive it? You know what I mean? We're giving you the keys. Can you drive it? And, you know, that's the best thing you can do for a young quarterback. I'm hoping that's what my Eagles are going to do for Jalen Hurts with 12th pick. My fear is that them moving this far back takes them out of the running for any of those three guys. Do you think Pitts, probably not Chase since you have Chase going to the Dolphins, do you think Pitts, Devontae Smith, or Waddle is available still at 12?
Yeah, I think that either Smith or Waddle are going to be there. When you just look at the other picks that are coming up in that area, you know, the Lions, they might end up taking one of those top guys, but the Panthers, they're set. They just brought in, you know, they got DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, so I don't think they're going to. The Cowboys are set. They just took their first-round pick with Jerry Jeudy. The Cowboys, I mean, come on, the Cowboys have the best receiving trio in the league right now. And then the Giants just went out and splashed a bunch of money on Kenny Galladay. So I think where they're at 12, I think that they've got to be happy with any of those three. Obviously, I don't think that Ja'Marr Chase is going to fall, but whether it's Devonta Smith or Jalen Waddle, I think one of those guys is going to be there at 12, and whoever it is, the Eagles are going to be happy with.
Yeah, and in my mock draft that I just wrote, which is available on our website, you guys can check it out there. I did have Waddle falling to us because I don't think Devonta Smith gets past the Lions. I think they need a little bit of receiver help there. You know, so I think Waddle ends up falling to us, and if that is who they preferred out of Devonta Smith and, you know, and Jalen Waddle, then that probably is why they were motivated to move back to 12, you know, hoping that he'd still be there. I think Tyrone makes a good point. I would love to see Micah Parsons stay in Pennsylvania and help our terrible linebacking core. However, I just think our receiver position is so bad. Unless all of those top guys are off the board, I don't see us taking Parsons. And even if they are, I think they'll probably – it's, you know, it's looking like they're going to address O-line or cornerback before they address the linebacking core. So as much as I would love Micah Parsons, and he's right, we need him, I don't see that happening.
I don't think there's any chance Parsons makes it past the Lions at 7. They've got a huge glaring weakness at linebacker, and Micah Parsons immediately fills that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And if the Lions don't take him, if Lions don't take him, Denver will take him, I'm sure. So he's probably going to be
Fangio was the head coach.
Yeah, right. And for even for the Eagles, I actually am not 100% sold that receiver should be the pick in the first round. I just think there is a lot of other holes. Like, and when you talk about you want to build around Jalen Hurts, like, look at what happened with Wentz. Like, you guys never protected him. And we saw what it did. Like, it wouldn't be a terrible idea to get him an offensive line piece, or even actually, I might even go cornerback if I'm the Eagles. That's a gaping hole for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Cowboys, it's kind of funny that, you know, last year it was like the Cowboys and the Eagles were picking pretty close for those wide receivers. They're picking pretty close again this year. And I'm guessing they're both looking at cornerbacks. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Eagles move up again or get Patrick Surtain if the Cowboys don't take him.
Yeah, I'm, you know, we've kind of transitioned into talking about picks for the Eagles. So really my thing is, I think it's regardless of how I feel about it, I think the Eagles are going to take one of those receivers if they're available. Although I agree with Mike. Especially when they moved back to 12, I'm like, good, because I don't love taking small receivers in the top 10. If you look at the history of that over the last like 5 years and maybe even further back, receivers under 6'2 going in the top 10 has not panned out for anybody, you know, for the most part. I think there's probably like one guy, and I'm blanking on the name, that actually panned out for his team in that case. You look at guys that, you know, like Corey Davis, no knock on Corey Davis, like I think he's solid. He finally had a decent year last year, but he's not staying with the Titans. John Ross, gone. You know what I mean? Like, these are receivers that typically have been going in the top 10 recently and have not been panning out. I'm more of a big receiver type of guy. So at 6, I was like, if we have Kyle Pitts, that's who I would prefer, even though he's labeled as a tight end. He can also play receiver. That's who I wanted at 6. I'm almost certain he's not going to be there at 12. That would be a gift. But for me, I'm not a big fan. Now, Waddle at 12, I wouldn't be mad at that. But I do agree with Mike. I think there's other ways that we can support, you know, Jalen Hurts, especially with the depth of this receiver class. I think we can address that later with some of the other options that might be available in the second round.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, though, about wanting that big-bodied receiver, and especially after losing Alshon Jeffrey. Right now, your number one guy is Jalen Reagor. So if you go out and get another guy like Devonta Smith, I mean, that's kind of a weird combination for receivers when you got Devonta Smith and Jalen Reagor. I mean, they're fast, but you really need somebody that can make those plays across the middle of the field.
Right. Yep. Agreed. So let's talk about you guys' favorite teams and ideal draft picks here. Dave, your team is picking at 20. That's the Chicago Bears. You guys can see the helmet in the back if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. So of realistic options that are going to be there at 20, who are you looking at your Chicago Bears taking?
Well, I just did a mock draft with a bunch of other guys where we were all, you know, assigned teams and going through the picks. And I was sitting there at 20 and Jalen Waddle was still on the board. So whether that happens on draft night, I don't know. But, you know, the Bears right now, they just have a terrible receiving core. They've got arguably one of the best receivers in the league with Allen Robinson. And then they just have nothing past that. Darnell Mooney showed some flashes last year, but I don't think he's really it. And it seems like right now the Bears are in must-win mode. They've got that defense, which is aging. And it sounds funny to say in must-win mode after, you know, barely making the playoffs and then bringing in Andy Dalton. But the fact of the matter is they've still got Akeem Hicks. They've still got Khalil Mack. When you've got two difference makers like that on defense, you're in win-now mode. They're 30 and 31 years old. Their contracts are coming to an end. So I think what they're going to try to do is surround Andy Dalton with some playmakers. So I love the idea of Jalen Waddle dropping there, but I don't think that that's a realistic one either. So if Rashad Bateman is still there at 20, that's another one that I'd be happy to pick. But I feel like wide receiver, he's fun to watch. And this is a deep wide receiver class too. So, you know, even if they skip over that in the first round, if, you know, Gregory, I always screw his last name, but was it Rosu? That edge rusher. If he's still there, you know, he'd be great as well. And then you can hope for somebody like Elijah Moore or something in the second round. But you really start rolling the dice there with who's still going to be available in round two. So I think that if Waddle or Bateman are still on the board at 20, I think those just make way too much sense.
And before I let Mike go, you know, I think I wouldn't rule out a drop for Waddle, because if you look at you know, how the top of the draft, we don't know how that's going to go after pick four. I've seen mock drafts where Devontae Smith falls to the Eagles at 12. And if that happens, I don't really know how Waddle doesn't see a pretty significant drop. There's going to be a you know, a few teams there that don't necessarily need a receiver, maybe the Pats, but they just signed two in free agency. So I don't know that that's a position they address. You could definitely see him slide to 20, even as far as 22 to the Colts, for him. If you know, the top of the draft doesn't quite shake out how a lot of people think it will. So I would not rule him out at 20.
Yeah. And you know, obviously I'm going to bring those guys up. You know, I'm a fantasy sports guy first. So obviously I'm looking at the wide receivers and stuff like that. But really what the Bears need is help on the O-lineman. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm watching, you know, offensive line tape and I know exactly who it is. Hopefully the Bears have done their research and can get a good O-lineman and beat that up a little bit too.
Yeah, that would be probably Elijah Vera Tucker or something like that. And at the 20 spot might be a good pick for them as well. Our guy Tyrone says Terrence Marshall to Chicago. I like Terrace Marshall a lot, wide receiver from LSU. He's a Ravens fan. I know him from back in the day. You should be hoping he drops to the Ravens, man. Don't give him up for the low to the Bears.
I wanted the Ravens to make a move for Kenny Galladay so badly. I feel like that was just a missing piece on that offense. It would have been terrible for fantasy purposes. Yeah, Sammy Watkins, I'm hoping for his revival. I'm a big Sammy Watkins fan, but Galladay would have immediately made that team a contender.
Is there any way Sammy Watkins plays more than 8 games this year?
I mean, it's so tough. I've got this one guy that really talked me off the ledge of using the term injury prone. He just said that injury prone is a myth. And, you know, he's a doctor, and he gave me some pretty good data that backed it up. I can send it over to you after the show, but last year I had that talk with him in the off season, and in my big high stakes lead, I was at 7 and I was like, man, I know Dalvin Cook's going to be there, but he's just hurt all the time and I don't want to do it. And he gave me this whole spiel about how injury prone is not a real thing. And sure enough, I picked up Dalvin Cook and won a championship with him. So,
That's interesting. Okay. I will take his word. He knows a lot more about that stuff than I do.
I guess I don't know.
Okay. So, Mike, your team's picking at 25, Pittsburgh Steelers. What position are you guys, do you think is the biggest need, and who do you think, you know, would be the biggest asset for the Steelers at that spot?
Well, you know, ideally they might have, you know, I don't know if this would play out this way, but if Ben would have retired and they could have traded up and tried to get one of these quarterbacks, that might have been ideal, with the way Ben looked the second half of the season last year. But he's coming back, and it looks like they're going to try to run this back almost, you know, bringing back Juju. Looks like they're going to be retaining a lot of these guys. They're going to lose Bud Dupree. Pouncey's going to retire. So that's why it's kind of confusing, right? So, Eli, we talked about this with my Raptors too, kind of confusing the direction. Kind of the Steelers right now. It's a little confusing the direction. I guess they're just going to try to run this back. And if that's the plan, I think you have to go with a lineman to try to, you know, give Ben time back there, which is really what he needs. So obviously, I'm not huge into line scouting. The best one I saw is this kid from Northwestern, Rashawn Slater. Yep. You know, if they can get him as a left tackle, if it's a center, I'm fine with that, with Pouncey retiring. But it looks like they're going to lose Alejandro Villanueva in free agency, so they're going to need a left tackle. So that's where I think they should go.
So I see Tyrone in the chat already saying that he prays you guys don't draft Najee Harris. But I see a lot of mocks going that way, and I don't think Kalen Ballage is it.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, the running back thing, it's confusing because I'm always torn between, does it really matter who the running back is? Just grab somebody in the fourth round and he can fill in for 2 years. Sometimes I think that way. But, you know, if they take a chance on, you know, maybe it's Harris, but then also the kid from Clemson, Etienne, who's been the starter there for the last 3 years, has really developed into a receiving back, and I actually might like him even more than Harris.
Especially for the Steelers kind of offense, you know, where you went a lot of, like, especially last year, you went a lot of empty backfields, and maybe that was because of how bad the run game was. If you're gonna be throwing to your running backs that much, certainly Etienne. Although Harris is no slouch in the passing game. And from a rushing standpoint, typically Harris would be the better fit for how you've ran the ball in the past. But I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those guys. I think both of those guys are studs and going to be instant impacts to whoever they end up with.
Yeah. I still want a lineman, though.
Yeah. And I actually, in my mock, I had you guys taking the center from Alabama just to, you know, replace Mike Pouncey right away, you know, and get a guy in there who could start for you day one at that spot. And that was also because Slater, I didn't have Slater falling that far. But again, a possibility. So if Slater's there, I probably think they'd take Slater. But I do like the Alabama center for them as well.
Yeah.
All right. So from a fantasy perspective, Dave, we've talked about a lot of these rookies and where their best fits are. Who are some of the top rookies? We'll start with redraft leagues that before the, obviously we're, you know, a month away from the draft. So bear with us because fit is going to matter here. But just from looking at the talent perspective of these rookies, who are you eyeing in redraft leagues, you know, for some of the top rookies?
So, I mean, without a doubt, Kyle Pitts. I think if you're like it's very rare that you see a tight end that can come in as a rookie and make a difference. And Kyle Pitts has all the measurables to absolutely do that. Now, as far as fits, I don't think it's going to happen because I'm pretty sure the Bengals are going to end up going with Sewell at five. But just the thought of him catching passes from Joe Burrow is so much fun and so tantalizing. I think the biggest thing, though, is going to see it's going to rely on where he lands. So right now, I mean, many people aren't doing a lot of rookie drafts. Most of the dynasty leagues I'm in, they're waiting until after the NFL draft, besides those like crazy hardcore ones where they want to do it before. But those are really tough to play. One person, though, that I think can make a difference, and we already talked, I knocked on him a little bit, but Devonta Smith is somebody that I think can come in and just make an immediate impact. You know, I don't know if it's going to happen for sure. This is another team that I can really see addressing offensive line, but the Chargers sitting at 13. I just keep thinking about Devonta Smith landing on the Chargers at 13. I can see it because it's going to be an immediate impact, and it's still somewhat realistic. We already talked about his BMI a little bit, but I think that, you know, he's still going to be able to pack on some pounds as a pro once he's working out with, you know, an NFL strength team. I think he's going to be okay. Mike Williams right now, he's playing that downfield threat, but he's heading into the last year on his rookie deal. He saw a drop-off in yardage after his first 1,000-yard season. So I think some team is going to end up paying up for Mike Williams just because of the size and speed that he has. And then that can put Devonta Smith on there as their deep threat. That's where Herbert excels, is with a long ball. So I love the idea of that fit, and that has me really, really salivating at the idea of Devonta Smith making an immediate impact.
That would be a lovely fit for him. I agree.
Yes. Yeah.
At 13, if he does drop, which is realistic, I think. Or a possibility that could happen. Although it'd be hard, it would be hard for me to see a situation where he goes past the Eagles and they pass on him. However, never ever count on, or never ever doubt Howie Roseman doing something ridiculous in the draft.
J.J. over DK, right?
Don't get me started. we could do this all day. Rager over Justin Jefferson. I think we passed on Davante Adams. It's just heartbreak after heartbreak.
Yeah, but to go back to the Kyle Pitts to the Bengals scenario, oh, man, I love that. Just the thought of that right away. And you add in T. Higgins, who was kind of unbelievable last year. If you compare his rookie numbers with a lot of other guys who have turned out to be great receivers, and he's got all the physical attributes to do that as well. So, like, that could be a serious offensive package. Dave, yeah. I want to put Dave on the spot, though. When you look at these quarterbacks, is it more, you know, I like Fields the most, then this guy, then this guy? Or is it more based on which teams they go to?
I think the biggest thing as far as a fantasy aspect, the things you want to go after are the rushing quarterbacks. Like, no knock on Mac Jones. I think that he can be solid, but like, it's almost a guarantee that regardless of where he lands, Justin Fields is going to be the best for fantasy purposes. That whole Konami code thing, it's real. And it's why I've got Jalen Hurts as my quarterback 7 in redraft rankings right now, because it's insane. So what I did, I just recently did the math on this, but I looked at what Jalen Reagor was running, his average yards per game, average rushing touchdowns per game. Extrapolate that over 16 full games. That's equivalent to 43 passing touchdowns, just what he brings with his rushing upside. And that's Jalen Hurts. That's the guy that I just specifically did a deep dive on. But Justin Fields is going to hit that same type of role in the NFL. Wherever he lands, he's going to be running wild. And, you know, rushing touchdowns are worth more than passing touchdowns. Rushing yards are worth more than passing yards. So it's the same thing we saw with Lamar Jackson a few years ago. We saw it with Kyler Murray and Josh Allen last year. Even if you're not an elite passer, that rushing upside alone can make you a QB1. And I think that Justin Fields is that guy that can immediately come in as a rookie and be a QB1 if he gets a starting job.
So you said he's the best of the rookie, but that does that include Trevor Lawrence?
Trevor Lawrence is going to be the better quarterback, but I think from a pure fantasy standpoint, I think that Justin Fields is going to end up outscoring Trevor Lawrence in fantasy.
Okay. And
jeez, that's kind of bold.
Depending on where he goes, I could see that. I mean, the Jaguars aren't one of the, you know, most stout offenses. Yes. The other thing is, you know, now that we're on Trevor Lawrence, how does Trevor Lawrence impact James Robinson's fantasy impact, who was a top five running back last year? Is he a positive or negative for James Robinson? And do you expect James Robinson to have the same role?
Yeah, I expect him to have the same role. I expect James Robinson to be another smash this year. As far as value goes in redraft leagues, I think James Robinson is one of the best guys you can get. Right now he's getting drafted outside of RB1 consideration. You know, he's somewhere like the 12th to 15th running back going off the board. And I get it. People are scared about Carlos Hyde. You know, Carlos Hyde has that connection with Urban Meyer. Carlos Hyde is 31 years old, and he's never had a starting role. So I'm not worried about that at all. What James Robinson reminds me of, you see this every once in a while when there's a team that's going through that rebuild. They just take a running back, whether it be late in the draft or undrafted in James Robinson's case, and they just relentlessly feed them the rock. I'm going to go to my Bears here, but the Bears did it. They drafted Jordan Howard in the sixth round, and that man had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. And then once they drafted Mitch Trubisky, once they brought in Khalil Mack, once they started making some moves, then that's when they spent up on the draft capital. They brought in David Montgomery, and they looked for somebody that was a more long-term option. But Jordan Howard, he's not that great of a running back, but he was just relentlessly fed the rock for 2 years during a rebuild. So we saw it last year with James Robinson. Right. I think we're going to see it again this year. And then if they take that step forward and they become, you know, a fringe playoff team, they make the playoffs or something like that, then I think we'll see them pony up with some, you know, second or third round draft capital in 2022. But going into next year, there's no reason that James Robinson shouldn't have the same role that he had last year. His pass catching ability, blocking ability, he did everything he needed to cement himself in that role.
Agreed. So one of the rookies that I want to talk about as far as from a fantasy perspective and their impact is a guy you mentioned earlier, Rashad Bateman. You know, he's not one of the premier top 12, 15 guys that top 15 or 12 or 15 ranked guys that people have been talking about. But he could actually end up landing in a really good situation later in the first round here. You know, you mentioned the Bears, you mentioned, you know, or we mentioned he could land with the Colts. He could land with, I think, the Ravens at 25. Yeah, Titans at 22. Mm. He could land pretty much anywhere here in the first round, or even the Packers. Do you think he's someone, as far as rookies go, that might even have the ability to have a better season than some of the top guys that have been mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. And you called it. I mean, right now, when you're drafting, you want to take the most talented player, which is going to be your Waddles and your Devonta Smiths and your Jamar Chase. But some of those guys that are picking at the end of the draft, and we already went through all of them, but there's a lot of teams that have glaring weaknesses at receiver right now. Even at 31, the Chiefs right now, they just lost Sammy Watkins. And like right now, you know, they've got Travis Kelce, but after that and Tyreek Hill, what, Mecole Hardman is your number two guy? DeMarcus Robinson? Like, they don't really have a number two receiver. So, yeah, after the draft, that's when you can kind of start making some projections and seeing how people can do. But Rashad Bateman, if he lands in one of those spots, we already talked about Elijah Moore a little bit, Rondale Moore. There's some guys that are really, really talented. Uh-huh. If they land into a position that has a lot of vacated targets, they can make an immediate impact as a rookie.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we discussed earlier that I wasn't really – big on the Eagles taking a receiver early on, because I think a lot of teams late in that first round might address other positions. And that second round is going to be loaded with talented receivers who will, and from a fantasy perspective, those talented receivers could end up in very good situations. So I think that's definitely something to watch out for as well.
Yeah, like your Eagles, they're picking, you know, fifth in the second round, and there's a good chance that Rondale Moore is still going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you want to spend that first round capital on somebody, or do you want to address the O-line or another position and then wait for Rondale Moore in the second?
That was my whole point. Like, we could get Parsons at 12 maybe, you know, or Patrick Surtain or Caleb Farley, you know, address one of our – or, you know, there's definitely Rashawn Slater, Christian Darrisaw. Like, there's so many guys we could get at 12 and then address a receiver. Because there's no way you can tell me at the fifth pick in the second round, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, Kadarius Toney, even Tutu Atwell, and I forget the other name that you mentioned, Elijah Moore. One of those five guys isn't sitting there at that spot. Like, probably multiple of those guys are sitting there in the second round at the fifth pick. To me, that seems like good draft sense, but everybody's going to be – all Eagles fans are focused on the receiver spot because – of how bad our receiving core was last year and because we missed on Justin Jefferson. But I'm like, why, if we missed on Justin Jefferson, we missed on DK Metcalf, why keep repeating the same mistakes? Like, why force the receiver here at 12?
Yeah.
That's just my logic behind it.
The Eagles, they're in a nice position too. And, you know, you guys already talked about Parsons a little bit out of Penn State, but that tight end from Penn State too is a
Yeah,
he's somebody who also might be available. So if you're looking for another pass catcher, you know, and those wide receivers aren't there, Freiermuth's another guy that you can plug in that would make an immediate impact.
Yeah, and pass catchers and wide receivers are slowly becoming like running backs. Whereas, and we just think like there's just so many of them that most of them are not separated by that much, right? And we can find a guy in the fourth round. We can find a guy in the third round. We talked about all this, how deep this receiver class is. A guy I really like is Nico Collins from Michigan, who sat out this year. But has a, you know, he's 6'4", he's got like a 6'9" wingspan. He's Michael Thomas-ish in frame. You imagine him in like a third or fourth round pick going to a team like a Packers or something like that, a team that could use a big body. You don't have to spend a first or a second round pick or all this money in free agency. That's kind of the way it's been going with receivers.
Yeah, agreed. So let's go to the free agent signings, because NFL free agency has been well underway here. And a lot of major moves have happened, which are going to have major fantasy impacts. So I think the first one we should talk about is someone we discussed earlier, Kenny Golladay, signing with the New York Giants. He apparently was really set on New York, went, met with them. And I, as much as I also would have liked to see him go to the Ravens, he didn't even end up leaving. He didn't take another meeting after New York. He signed with them there on the spot.
Yeah, he left Chicago and went to New York and signed with them.
Right. Exactly. So, what do you think, Kenny Golladay, how do you see his fit here in New York from a football perspective? And then from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah. From a football perspective, I absolutely love this move. Last year, Evan Ingram was their number one guy when it came to targets. And Evan Ingram is not the guy you want leading your team in targets. He led the league in lowlights. I mean, that's his role, is dropping passes and making a fool of himself. So them finally getting that big-bodied receiver is great to see. I love it. I think this elevates absolutely everybody on the team. I think as far as fantasy purposes go, Kenny Golladay is going to see 120-plus targets. And really, I think, you know, on top of this move, because I think it helps Saquon Barkley, I think it helps Daniel Jones. I think as far as helping Kenny Golladay, I think you're still going to see similar production that he put in Detroit, albeit he'll be a little bit healthier this time around. I don't think he's going to be nursing injuries because of contract disputes, but I think that he's still going to be a low end wide receiver one. But I love what this does to everybody else on the team. I think the odd man out, though, is Evan Ingram. I think he takes a catastrophic blow to his fantasy value here. There's still some people holding on because he's got that first round draft capital, but I think that his days as getting drafted as a tight end one should come to an end now that Galladay's in town.
Yeah, and my thing is, you know, I think I agree with you. I think he gives similar production, but for those who have been believers in Danny Dimes, I think you've got to be a little bit excited here, right? Like, Kenny Golladay is the best weapon that he's had. So if you were a believer before, maybe you're buying back in. So is Danny Dimes a a viable QB1, or are you drafting him as a QB2 and waiting and seeing?
Yeah, QB1 might be a little bit of a stretch, but we already talked about it.
Feels like a stretch.
Feels like a little bit of a stretch. But, you know, Danny Dimes, he's got wheels. We saw it. Sometimes he gets tripped up on his own wheels, but the dude can run. But, no, I don't think I'd go as far as drafting him as a QB1. But if the mindset that you're taking going into your draft is, I'm not going to draft a quarterback high, I'm going to wait for somebody late, then I'd take Danny Dimes and I'd wait for somebody else, because there's going to be somebody else that you want to pair up with him. You don't want all of your eggs in Daniel Jones's basket, because he's going to trip and smash them.
But I do like the upside of that offense this year. And with Saquon coming back,
mm-hmm. That's huge.
Like another free agent is Fitzmagic to Washington. Yes. And Curtis Samuel mm-hmm. to Washington. The NFC East, they might have a team hit 500 this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got Dak Prescott coming back. You got the Giants, who, I mean, the Giants brought in Kenny Galladay, but they made a lot of moves. They really beefed up their team this year. Washington beefed up their team. I mean, I think it's going to be a very different NFC East than we've seen in the last few years. But that's also a storyline that I've heard many, many off seasons, and then the season starts and the NFC East does the NFC East things. But
yes.
No, I like Washington from a football standpoint, but I don't like what these teams or what these moves did to a lot of my favorite players' fantasy values. I think that Terry McLaurin's going to take a huge hit. Like when it first hit, before the Curtis Samuel signing, I was stoked. I was like, you know, Terry McLaurin's going to be seeing 9 to 10 targets a game. He's going to be getting those downfield shots. And then Curtis Samuel came in and kind of threw a wrench in that. I think Curtis Samuel is also going to camp Antonio Gibson's upside a bit. I mean, there's going to be a lot of targets to go around, but I don't think that Ryan Fitzpatrick on a team with an elite defense is going to be able to support three fantasy options. So between Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin, and Antonio Gibson, one of them's got to be the odd man out, and I'm struggling deciding who it's going to be right now, but I don't think all three of those guys are going to be putting up numbers that we want to see.
So does Terry McLaurin fall out of wide receiver one territory?
Yeah, I think in Dynasty, you can still roll the dice on him as a low-end wide receiver one. But as far as redraft goes, there's just too many question marks for me to feel confident taking him as a wide receiver one. Right now in my rankings, I've got him sitting at tight end 15.
Okay. So not too far off. Yeah, right outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of along that those same lines then, what happens to a guy like Josh Jacobs who they bring in Kenyon Drake to, you know, like what is, I mean, first of all, you know, we get like five running backs who aren't in a committee every year and they take one away from us. I think how do you treat Josh Jacobs and Kenyon Drake?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I've said this on the show before, but I am huge on zero wide receiver drafting. So even when I'm talking about these guys that are going to be wide receiver ones, you're not going to see them on any of my teams, because I'm going to let somebody else take them. And the reason for that is because these bell cow backs don't exist anymore. It's like everybody is in a timeshare. So if I'm coming into my redraft league, I want to leave the top three rounds with three guys that I know are going to see volume. And that list is short. I mean, there's maybe 12 guys on that list. You know, once you start, and there's some rookies that could carve out some bigger, or not rookies, second year guys now, that could carve out some bigger roles for themselves. But, you know, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, Jonathan Taylor, there's really no guarantees with those guys. So yeah. Josh Jacobs was somebody that I was never a huge fan of. I kind of put Josh Jacobs and Joe Mixon in the same tier. They had the draft capital. They were on teams with decent offensive lines. They got a lot of volume. Or I'm sorry, Joe Mixon doesn't have a good offensive line. But, you know, everything else is true. Where these guys were going to get the volume. And that alone was going to support RB1 numbers. But, now with Kenyon Drake in town, Josh Jacobs, as far as I'm concerned, just isn't really that talented. You know, he's good at what he does. He can dive through the middle, pick up 3 or 4 yards. But he's a plotter. He doesn't really have that breakaway speed. So I was never... You know, as far like Josh Jacobs was somebody that if he was staring at me in the end of the second round, I was going to draft him because of the volume. But now that you've got somebody that is the complete opposite of Josh Jacobs, somebody that can catch the ball, somebody that can run routes, somebody that's elusive in the open field, I think that there's going to be a pretty heavy timeshare there. And I'm just avoiding both of those guys completely.
Same. And actually, I wasn't too mad about the signing because I have Josh Jacobs in our keeper league. And I have a tough, we have five guys to keep, and I have a pretty tough choice of those five. and the Raiders just made it easy for me in getting rid of Jacobs. So there's just no way I'm keeping him, you know, in that case. So that kind of made it easy on me. I want to go back to Washington football team because I want to talk Antonio Gibson a little bit here. Is Antonio, where's he falling in your range of running backs here? I'm assuming because you're downgrading these guys, he's no longer RB1 territory, more high-end RB2.
Yeah, I'm pulling up my rankings right now. I just redid these this morning. I don't have it off the top of my head. Antonio Gibson is sitting at RB16 for me. And I feel like that's pretty appropriate. Yeah. You know, he was going to have some volume issues coming into the season with JD McKissick, you know, and I'm pretty sure even Bryce Love is coming back from injury this year. So there's going to be some mouths to feed. And I love Antonio Gibson as far as a playmaker, but that Curtis Samuel signing, man, that really caps his upside. And a lot of people are saying, you know, how does a wide receiver going to cap his upside? But Curtis Samuel plays out of the backfield. He runs a lot of short routes. Antonio Gibson was a receiver in college, and he did a lot of his damage through the air. So really, Antonio Gibson and Curtis Samuel, they're very similar players. So it's going to be interesting to see how that's, you know, delegated between the two of them. Another big thing, though, is that a lot of his value and JD McKissick's value last year came from Alex Smith, who had the lowest depth of target in the entire league. You know, he was throwing most of his balls were getting completed behind the line of scrimmage. And that's great when you've got fantasy running backs. But now you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is the antithesis of Alex Smith. Rather than doing those check downs behind the line of scrimmage, he's just going to have a hand inside his face mask, and he's just going to sidearm it 50 yards downfield.
He's far of light.
he is far of light, absolutely. And so I'm a little bit scared with Antonio Gibson. Even looking at that right now, like I'm looking at it at RB16, and I feel like I'm still too high on him. I might even have to slide him down a little bit lower than that.
Interesting. So I want to talk about the Patriots now, because – of all the teams in free agency, they spent the biggest bag, right? They blew the whole bag, knowing that Tom Brady just won a Super Bowl without them. And I don't think Bill Belichick liked that one bit. So Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith are two of the very few tight ends that you could even rely on at all in fantasy football. And now they're on the same team. And they bring Cam Newton back, and that's probably who their starter is going to be. Can this offense support both of those, or does this just ruin both of them?
No, I think the latter. I think this ruins both of them, but I think this is great for Cam Newton.
Yes.
I think this gives him and the other guy you didn't even talk about, Kendrick Bourne, wide receiver. He's another great end zone target or red zone target. So, you know, that was their big problem last year, was scoring in the red zone. And Cam Newton only had 8 passing touchdowns all year. So that's kind of what worries me when you're talking about Jonnu and Kendrick Bourne. And who was it? They brought in one other receiver that I can't even think of.
Nelson Agholor.
Oh, Agholor. Exactly. Yeah.
And Agholor.
So now you've got a guy coming off of, you know, 8 touchdowns last year. Julian Edelman returning from injury. Nelson Agholor on the team. Kendrick Bourne on the team. Jonnu Smith on the team. Hunter Henry on the team. You got Damian Harris, who can catch the ball out of the backfield. That's a lot of mouths to feed for a pretty anemic offense. So I think this is going to be good for Cam Newton, but I'm not really too crazy about Jonnu Smith or Hunter Henry.
And are you – I'm assuming you're not crazy about Agholor or Kendrick Bourne either?
I'm not. No, I think that there's just too many mouths to feed. I think this is still going to be a run-first team. A lot of people see this in fantasy and they think, well, you know, Jonnu Smith, he had some good, you know, games. I don't even think you could say good years because he was never really able to string it together. Hunter Henry had some great seasons. But what those guys do really, really well that doesn't show up in the fantasy stats, they're both great blockers. And being a run-first team built around Cam Newton with Sony Michel and Damian Harris there, they brought James White back again. I think they're still going to be a run-first team. So everyone expecting this, you know, gaudy, you know, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez 2.0. I don't think that's where you're going to see. I think that you're going to see Jonnu out there kind of playing a fullback role out of the tight end slot.
Yeah. So is Cam Newton the only Patriots offensive player that could possibly be a week in, week out starter?
Damian Harris.
Even in that.
Damian Harris. Another one. Yeah. I've been every mock draft I've been doing, I've been grabbing Cam Newton late. For whatever reason, the market really soured on him last year. And I don't say for whatever reason. I mean, he had a pretty bad year. He was like throwing more interceptions and completions in some games. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had no supporting cast around him. Right. And yeah. you just got to, at some point, trust Bill Belichick a little bit that he saw the problem, he addressed the issue, and that they're going to be better next year. So Cam Newton for sure. And then I really like Damian Harris too.
What about porn star Jimmy? I would, if I were the Patriots,
I'd be looking to grab
PJ. Yeah. I mean, I'd be looking to grab him. He's better than Cam Newton, right? I think we have questions about Jimmy G and how much he contributed to that 49ers Super Bowl run. But he's got to be better than Cam Newton. And I think he could actually get these tight ends involved. So I would be looking for that.
Yeah, I think it just kind of depends what Bill Belichick is looking for. Because there were a lot, you know, if he wanted to go out and find a quarterback that could just stand in the pocket and complete passes, he would have been in on the Carson Wentz sweepstakes. He would have been making moves for other quarterbacks. You know, I think that Belichick sees the way that the league is heading right now, which is, you know, these run-first quarterbacks are just completely changing the NFL. And he might be a couple years late by trying to pull in Cam Newton rather than going out and drafting one, or, you know, they could have gotten Jalen Hurts last year. But I think that that's what he's trying to do, is mimic teams that have shown success, like the 49ers and the Cardinals and the Ravens.
So I think one signing that kind of went under the radar was Corey Davis to the Jets. You know, and we've seen the Jets have at least, you know, someone like Jamison Crowder have some success, and Corey Davis came on strong last year, especially when A.J. Brown was hurt. Now, we don't know who's going to be throwing the ball, Sam Darnold or Zach Wilson, and I don't know if that really matters from a fantasy impact for him. Is Corey Davis someone that could possibly be an impact fantasy player next year for the Jets?
Yeah, absolutely. He dealt with a lot of injuries early on in his career, and then once he finally started to get healthy, we saw A.J. Brown take over as the alpha. And, I mean, if you're competing for targets with A.J. Brown, doesn't matter who you are, you're going to lose that battle. I mean, AJ Brown is just a target hog. He's a monster.
He's so open. Good.
I just took him as the. I'm doing in the middle of a dynasty startup right now. I took him as the number one receiver off the board before Devontae Adams, before Tyreek Hill. I went AJ Brown. The dude is just an absolute beast. But we're talking about Corey Davis here, who, in his own respect, is also a beast. Still holds the record for NCAA receiving yards, and you know, he's no slouch either. He's 6'3". He's got a big body. I think that he kind of fills in that role, you know, dare I say it, an A.J. Brown role. Like, he can take on that alpha receiver role. It's just he was getting out alphaed by A.J. Brown. But I think that now, you know, there isn't really a lot of competition in New York. I think he can easily walk in and see 120 targets right off the bat.
Wow. Ooh. So 120 targets, that's got to be bare minimum wide receiver two territory, right?
Yeah, and I think he makes that. Like, he's, you know, a very average wide receiver too. I don't think he's ever going to have those boom games, you know, where he's going to be putting up 200 yards and two touchdowns. But I think as far as a safe floor, he's going to see enough volume to justify a safe floor.
So why don't I have you do this then? Why don't we say, so we've talked about Kenny Galladay to the Giants. We've talked about Corey Davis to the Jets. And it sounds like you're high on both of those guys. And then the other two receiver moves really were Will Fuller to the Dolphins. Where you would think he walks in as wide receiver two with Devontae Parker, maybe wide receiver one. He had a great season last year.
Maybe wide receiver three after they take Jamar Chase.
It could be. And then you also have Sammy Watkins to the Ravens. Do either of those guys, can they touch that Corey Davis, Kenny Galladay ceiling you're talking about?
No, I hate the Will Fuller move. Like, that is the one move that I really just do not like.
Yeah.
And he showed it this year that, you know, he can do more than just be a downfield threat. But that's really not his game. I mean, Will Fuller, I was hoping he was going to go to somebody with a huge arm. I wanted to see him in Indianapolis with Carson Wentz. I wanted to see him in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. There were so many good fits for him. And then to put him with Tua, who really can't push the ball downfield, it was just kind of a head-scratching move for me. I felt like there were so many better receiving options. Like, flip those two players. Put Will Fuller in Baltimore. Put Sammy Watkins in Miami. And I think those are better fits for both teams. So Sammy Watkins, I feel like he's a missing piece that's going to help out the Ravens tremendously. That's what they've needed, is somebody that can catch balls across the middle of the field, not named Mark Andrews. So I love that move. But just given how little they throw the ball, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of fantasy relevance for Sammy Watkins next year.
So, speaking of the Dolphins, let's say Chase goes to them at six. I think that's pretty likely. Do is rank those three receivers then, Jamar Chase, Will Fuller, Devontae Parker, from a fantasy perspective, out of, you know, if you're looking at those guys in drafts. Obviously, Dynasty, Fuller, you're looking at Chase, but redraft leagues.
Yeah, that's a great question. That is a great question. I think Fuller is definitely going to sit at the bottom of that list for me. And then when you're looking at Jamar Chase and Devontae Adams, I mean, I feel like you got to put Devontae Parker on top just because of the seasons that he's had. You know, he's had a pretty tough career up to this point, but it seems like he's finally starting to get it together. But his best season was with Fitzpatrick. You know, so you know what? I think I'd put Chase at the top of that pecking order. I think if they take Chase, he immediately becomes the number one guy. I think Parker can sit there as kind of a 1B, not necessarily a number two, but I think it would go Chase, then Parker, and then Fuller down at the bottom.
I would probably, just because we don't know what Chase is going to be, I'd say Parker, but I would not doubt that Jamar Chase ends up being the best. I think he's going to for sure be the most talented out of those three, but the rapport there is there with Parker. So I think especially early on, and I think you see a surge from Chase, you know, after he starts getting that rapport with Tua.
No, I've always avoided rookies in redraft. And then 2020 happened and just like completely changed everything I thought that I knew about rookies in the NFL. I mean, heading into this year, I think you're going to see rookies flying up draft boards because of the success of the 2020 class found.
Yeah. And especially because there's a lot of big names in this rookie class from the skill position standpoint, you know, and I think most of these guys are going to end up in pretty good fits. Like most of these guys are not going to end up with awful quarterbacks or anything like that, or in terrible situations, which I think is intriguing even in redraft leagues. But for, let's say from a dynasty perspective, let's talk about the rookies a little bit. Give me your top five rookies in your fantasy your dynasty league fantasy rankings.
So are we going super flex or just normal like skill play? We're leaving quarterbacks out of this.
Yeah, we'll leave quarterbacks out. Let's go running back, wide receiver, and tight end, I guess, for Pitts.
All right. So Chase is definitely my number one guy. I think that he just has all the tools to just be, you know, a top receiver in the league for the next, you know, 8 to 10 years, no problem. So I love Jamar Chase as my number one. Kyle Pitts is the easy number two. And there's a lot of risk there. You know, I understand it. And one of the strategies that I've heard from a lot of dynasty players is say, hey, don't pay up to take Pitts year one. Let somebody else take him year one. Let him do the thing that every rookie tight end does and fail, and then try to get him for cheaper after the 2021 season. But still, just the fact that he could pop off as a rookie, I'm still taking Pitts as my number two guy. Number three is probably going to be a little bit shocking for you, but I really like Etienne above Najee Harris because of his pass catching upside.
Yeah,
he is going to be the best running back. Put Najee at number two, or at number four, my number two running back right behind that. And then at number three, I've got Devonta Smith just for the simple reason that you can't teach speed and he's got it.
Yeah. And you know what? I think Etienne even will fall in a little bit better of a situation just by default, because I think Najee Harris is going to fall to, like, you know, could be the Steelers, could be the Bills at number 30. And like, not that those offenses are bad, but those offenses have really good quarterbacks. So like that tends to hurt someone who's not a pass catching running back. Whereas Etienne, you know, will probably go early second and, or
could go to Tampa. He could go to the Jags with Trevor Lawrence. Wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be interesting as well. And a huge downer to James Robinson, fantasy lovers, but that would be an excellent fit for him at 25 as well. But I agree. I think the, you know, especially in PPR, Etienne, because of his pass catching ability, sets him apart there. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, the same way that a running quarterback is a cheat code, so is a running back that can catch passes. I mean, we saw it last year. J.D. McKissic was having multiple weeks finishing as an RB1. It's J.D. McKissic.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So back to the free agent signings. Let's talk a little bit. I think there was one other top free agent that landed. I'm drawing a blank here.
we can talk about Philip Lindsay just screwing up all of my David Johnson shares.
Yeah, Philip Lindsay's excellent. I mean, does he just love committees? What is, I don't understand the signing there. I don't even understand it really from the Texans' perspective. Whereas, you know, obviously this is a downer to David Johnson, but do you see a scenario where Lindsay, you know, because he's younger, overtakes David Johnson in this backfield maybe later in the season, or is this committee automatically?
I feel like I should put a disclaimer out here because I don't want you like going into your third round and drafting Philip Lindsay. But given the bunch right here, we've got a 29-year-old David Johnson, we got a 31-year-old Mark Ingram, and then we have a 26-year-old Philip Lindsay. People forget, but this man started his career with back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and then he got injured, and then Melvin Gordon came in, and he lost some touches to Melvin Gordon. But this kid showed some burst when he came into the league, and he's still a good running back. So just given the age and the wear and tear that the two guys ahead of him have, I love the idea of Philip Lindsay as a late-round flyer. And it's one of those things where, who knows, the season could end, and he could have 60 carries and 25 targets. Very likely. I mean, it's we don't even know who the quarterback's going to be for the Texans going into this year. But out of that bunch, I think that Philip Lindsay really could carve out a decent role for himself. And he's the only one that I'd really, you know, think about drafting considering ADP. I want nothing to do with Mark Ingram. David Johnson is still probably going to go in the 5th or 6th round. So I'd rather use that 12th or 13th round pick on Philip Lindsay.
This is the guy I wanted the Steelers to grab at running back. I thought him and Benny Snell could have combined for a nice backfield. I think you have to avoid him now, though.
Yeah. It's really a shame that they went out and got Melvin Gordon, because Philip Lindsay, he looked like he was going to be one of those Chris Carson, Arian Foster stories, even James Robinson, you know, coming into the league undrafted and just
Terrence Davis
grabbing the starting role. Yeah,
in Denver.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we didn't get to see it. They went out and splashed some money and brought in Melvin Gordon, but hopefully he can carve a role out down in Houston now.
So, and another guy who changed teams this offseason, and you tweeted about this, Mike Davis to the Falcons. You know, he was very good in replacement for McCaffrey for a few games there. You're not super sold on him here in Atlanta, though. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I think the biggest reason is that they're going to likely draft a running back that's going to replace Mike Davis. I don't think that they brought Mike Davis in to be their running back. And that Falcons, that hole that they had at running back with Todd Gurley gone, was just so tantalizing for so many running backs that were available. Todd Gurley was out there on like half a knee last year and still scoring a touchdown almost every single game. You get the benefit of playing half your game, over half your games indoors. You've got an offense that is going to have Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley just opening things up for you. There are so many running backs that I wanted to see go there. I think Kenyon Drake would have been an RB1 if he landed in Atlanta. But unfortunately, they went out and got Mike Davis. I don't think that Mike Davis is really that good. He didn't do much to impress me in Seattle. He didn't do much to impress me in Chicago. But that Panthers offense, man, it is just built for a running back to just come in there and just take over things. I mean, even Curtis Samuel, when he was taking his snaps out of the backfield, he was doing work with them. So yeah. I don't think that Mike Davis is that talented of a player. I think he ended up in an ideal situation last year, and I'm thankful for all the people that he helped win fantasy championships. But I think that he's going to end up heading into the season as the running back two on that Falcon squad.
Yeah, I think so too. And also the Panthers are an interesting one where, say, the 49ers do take Mac Jones and they make what we think is a dumb decision and they take Mac Jones. And then the Falcons say, we're going to roll with Matt Ryan, take a lineman. Then you got Bengals, Dolphins, Lions. Probably the next team to take quarterback is the Panthers there maybe. You could see a scenario where they get Justin Fields and pair him with a Christian McCaffrey. That could be seriously dangerous.
That would be a ridiculous backfield. I almost want that to happen just to see how that
ends. I think I do.
That read option would be one of the scariest things in the NFL.
Yeah.
And then last free agent that we'll touch on here before we move on, AJ Green to the Cardinals. Anything there, or is he washed? Are we out on AJ Green? Yeah, we're out on AJ Green.
Yeah, man. I had so many people sending this article to me that I wrote last offseason saying the title of my article last offseason was, "Why is the NFL forgetting about AJ Green?" And I wrote this article telling everyone, like, this man, he's done nothing but churn out 1,000-yard seasons. He's forgot it. he looked like he was playing with, you know, 6-inch long cleats in the mud last year. He couldn't get it was terrible to see. And it's not that opportunity was a problem. Joe Burrow was force feeding him the ball. Like, we'd see these games where you look at AJ Green's stat line and it's like, all right, 12 targets for 3 catches and 8 yards. Like, how did this even happen? So I think that AJ Green, you know, one of my favorite players in the league for a long time, what he did in the Bengals with Andy Dalton was a thing of beauty, but doesn't have the speed, doesn't have the hops, just doesn't have it anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. Does he help Kyler Murray at all for you?
No. I mean, Kyler Murray's still going to be a top 5 quarterback, regardless of how you spin it next year. I don't think that Kyler Murray or that AJ Green is going to do too much. Because I don't even think Larry Fitzgerald, he hasn't even officially retired yet. So they might go out there Fitz and AJ Green next year, which is just
that silly would be to me. The oldest, slowest receiver. No, okay. But that would be interesting. So let's talk a little bit about some of the remaining free agents, because technically Larry is still one of them. He has not re-signed with the Cardinals yet, although I'm certain he will. So from these, we'll talk about just skill position guys. Of these skill position guys that are still available, where would you like to see them land? From a fantasy perspective, so we're talking James Conner, guys like that. Where do we see some of these guys landing, and what would be best fits for them fantasy-wise?
When you said that we were going to be talking about remaining free agents, I looked it up, and there really aren't too many left. Like James Conner, Antonio Brown, that's pretty much it. Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, you've got these aging running backs.
Yeah,
I just said this on a podcast on Friday, but my biggest fear is that one of those guys ends up in Los Angeles playing for the Chargers. Mm. I have been touting Austin Eckler. I think that Austin Eckler is just primed for a breakout season. And the worst thing that could happen is they bring in one of those old between the tackle running backs and lower his ceiling. But it's really tough. I mean, these guys that are available, I don't think there really are any good fits for them, or they would have been picked up. I think the only guy that, you know, I really feel confident predicting is Antonio Brown back to Tampa Bay. It doesn't seem like there's been any interest. I have never seen a team try to run it back the way that Tampa Bay has. They've already got all 22 starters locked in to come back next year, which is just incredible. So I think that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they're already in conversations to bring him back, because it doesn't seem like any other team has an ounce of interest in AB.
Yeah, and that's what was interesting to me, is that he, of all people, is the last kind of man standing here of guys who haven't been re-signed, because, you know, we all know how much he loves him some Tom Brady. So I wonder what's the holdup there. And from a fantasy perspective, so, like, he was solid in the 8 games that he played, but he's still the number 3 receiver, you know, on the Bucs behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So if he returns there, where do Mike Evans, because he did have a negative impact on Mike Evans, I think, and Chris Godwin from a fantasy perspective. Are neither of those guys wide receiver 1 territory? Are they even wide receiver 2 territory still?
It's really tough, because I think pure talent, I think Godwin is the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I agree.
By a mile. I mean, he just looks like the best player, but for whatever reason, once they get near the end zone, Tom Brady loves him some Mike Evans.
That's right,
so Mike Evans. It makes it so tough. And then you've also got last year, Chris Godwin had a broken finger, which is really, you know, messing with his catching ability.
Yeah.
So I think that off the board, you're going to see Mike Evans being the first drafted, Chris Godwin being the second drafted. And then if Antonio Brown is still there, he's going to be a late round flyer for some people. But I think that Chris Godwin finishes as the top guy this year. I think the injury set him back a little bit. I think that he is the most talented of the bunch, and cream always rises to the top.
Agreed. And then for the Bucs backfield, you out on that backfield, or you rocking with Fournette? You think he creates some separation here?
Man, this is a tough one too, because all last offseason, my biggest misses of the offseason last year were AJ Green and Leonard Fournette, and you're bringing both of them up on this show, bringing back a lot of feelings. But it's tough, because I don't think that Ronald Jones had done anything in his career to really show that he was that good. And then last year, all he did was drop passes and fumble the ball, and then in between that, you'd see these 80-yard touchdowns that he would rip off, and it's like, that's why they drafted Ronald Jones. All right, that makes sense. And then he'd drop a swing route the very next play. So, I want to say I'm out on that, because I've been burned by Bruce Arians running backs going back to his days with, you know, Tim Hightower and back in the Cardinals. Like I feel like I've just been burned by Bruce Arians running backs so many times. But I have a feeling as we get closer and closer to the season, I'm going to start hopping back on that Leonard Fournette train.
Okay, so
I think he's the most complete of them, is why he can catch the ball, he can block the ball. You know, if we're talking pure running, Ronald Jones is a better runner than Leonard Fournette. But when you're working on a Tom Brady offense, you want somebody that can do everything, and Leonard Fournette can do everything.
Well, and the other thing that was talked about mostly when Fournette was signed was if Tom Brady wanted Ronald Jones, there's no Leonard Fournette, right? So I think we know who Tom prefers, probably because he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and because, you know, he's the more complete back. But there's no Leonard Fournette signing if Tom Brady signed off on Ronald Jones.
Yeah, you remember that picture that Tom Brady tweeted out with, like, him and Leonard Fournette dapping it up inside Tom Brady's house? Never posted a picture like that with Keyshawn Vaughn and Ronald Jones.
Right. All right. So one topic I'm going to throw at you here that we did not prepare you for. Mike loves to do this to me on the pod.
Yes.
So we're going to do this to you here today. I'm going to have you pick my keepers for my dynasty, for our keeper league. Okay.
Oh, so, nice.
2QB league. I've got Kyler Murray. He's a solid keep, right? Like, there's no way we're not keeping Kyler. I'm not keeping Kyler Murray.
Do you have to give up a pick, or is just you're keeping any of these people as like your first five?
You do not give up any picks. You just keep five, and then we redraft. So it's a 2QB league, PPR, and it's an 8-team league, so it's relatively small, and we have 2 flex spots. So just to keep that in mind. So really, I'm keeping Kyler Murray. I think that's a safe one. I have to keep Zeke. I think that would be ridiculous not to. And I think Waller is a guaranteed keep because the tight end position is so bad. So I need 2 guys I got to keep out of Swift, Herbert, and we'll say Keenan Allen and Julio. Of those 4 guys, who's the 2 I should keep?
So are there any limits to how long you can keep guys? Like, if you keep somebody like for 2 years, you have to drop them, or you can keep somebody forever.
We can keep them. No limits. Yeah,
you got Metcalf too.
Oh God. Okay. So you threw some doubt in on Metcalf, so I'm gonna throw him in that bunch. Those are the 5. We'll throw out Julio. So let's say Keenan, Metcalf, Swift, and who was the other one I had? Oh, and Herbert.
So I've been a pretty adamant hater on Swift this whole offseason.
I just that as well.
I'm not a fan of the Lions organization. Like, they've just destroyed running backs. Like, every single running back they've taken in the first and second round since Barry Sanders has been out of the league within a few years. So that being said, I feel like you got to take Swift just because he's one of the few guys that, you know, we talked about it. There aren't a lot of running backs that are going to see 250-plus touches a year. Swift is one of those guys that can hit 250-plus touches. So as much as I don't like the Lions, as much as I hate them even worse with Jared Goff, as much as I hate them even worse with Kenny Galladay out of town, as much as I hate it even worse with Jamal Williams there, I still think that DeAndre Swift is one of the guys you got to take. So then for me, that leaves it between Herbert and Metcalf. And I love Justin Herbert, man. He is so good. But because it's just an 8-team league, you can still get another decent quarterback off of waivers or in the draft or whatever it may be. And I've also, you know, these are 2 guys that you follow me on Twitter. You know, I've also been off the DK Metcalf hype train. You know, he had a terrible second half of the season, but DK Metcalf is a, you know, 24-year-old Julio Jones pretty much. Like, if you get the opportunity to keep these guys forever, I think that you've got to weigh age in there just a little bit. And given that he is so young and that he has potential to be the next Calvin Johnson, the next Julio Jones, I think that you keep him, even though you're probably going to like Herbert a little bit more this year than you would DK Metcalf. The fact that you can keep this guy forever, you know, I think you got to keep Metcalf.
And that's, you know, I wasn't really even thinking about him not being a keep until I saw all of your tweets. And I'm like, okay, Dave is actually very solid points here. And it's ruining me.
For anyone not listening, the 2 things, like, I just did a dive on DK Metcalf and started really hating him the more I jumped into it. First half of the year, first 8 games, he was a wide receiver 2. Second half of the games, his final 8 games, he was a wide receiver 39 in PPR leagues. On top of that, Tyler Lockett had more targets last year than DK Metcalf. So there's a lot of things Oh, and then we're not even talking about the Russell Wilson drop.
I was just about to get cause to that. In the locker room. Yeah.
But disregarding all of that, DK Metcalf is still a gigantic man that can run a blazing. I mean, like, he just has the immeasurables. So as much as there's a lot of things that might work against him in 2021, his long-term prospects, I mean, he's still one of the best receivers in the game.
Agree. And I think just because the like you said, the QB position is so deep, I'll probably get Herbert back anyway. But
exactly,
yeah. You know, who knows? But yeah,
he's keeping Jalen Hurts, right? You can always get your boy Hurts too. I think he's going to be better than Herbert this year.
Well, now if I know he was watching the podcast today, he might be considering keeping Jalen Hurts. He has a tough decision too with the five keepers. Five keepers is hard in an 18 league.
It's like a half that's dynasty. Like,
yeah, it is. It is.
I like unique leagues like that though.
Right? It's awesome. I do love that.
Yeah.
None of my two leagues, I make sure, like, if somebody proposes a league to me and I'm already in a league that has those same exact rules, I'm not joining. Every one of my leagues has to have some unique twist to it for me to join.
That makes a lot of sense. Cause like, why join the same league twice? Yeah, that's how right. ours. That's how me and Mike are in three different leagues, and all three leagues have different rules. That's
yeah.
It. That
makes it way more fun.
Same way. Yep.
Yeah. Three
leagues anywhere from 8 to 16 people. Some have super flex. Some are tight end premium. Some dynasty. Some keepers. You got to keep it fresh. I know some people that, you know, this is like their day job, where they're just like, I'm going to join 70 leagues and I'm going to try to make my money back, and that's just too much work for me.
Yeah, agreed. Mike, did you have any other last questions, topics for Dave?
No, I'm not going to make you pick my dynasty keepers. You know, I have some integrity here, okay? I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be like nail and get every pick from you on Twitter and get every start sit from you, because I feel like I'd be taking advantage of you because we have such a good relationship. So I won't do that to you.
You got my email address. Anyway.
They don't even know what's going on the side, Dave. Okay, that stays between us. Okay, I'm not gonna bring it to the pod like Eli. But no, you know, I didn't really have anything else. Just we appreciate you, Dave. You know, you're the knowledge guy. You know, I like these podcasts because I don't have to say much. I just let you handle business because you got this stuff down to a T, buddy.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me back on. You guys are seriously awesome. Like I said, I think this is the third time I've said it, but as long as you keep inviting me back, I'll keep coming on.
Absolutely, man. Before we let you go, why don't you tell the people where they can find you on social media and where they can find the content you're producing now?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at @DaveKluge_FF. That's DaveKluge_FF. And then you can find all of my content now exclusively on Fantasy Pros and Football Guys. I think last time I was with you guys, I was writing for like 25 different sites, and I kind of honed that in a little bit.
Yeah, man. We're super, super happy for you, man. You know, we've been making some big moves. I'm going to go check out the episode with Matthew Berry on your Twitter page as soon as we get off of here today. Yes, that subtle flex that you dropped in. I don't know if you guys heard. This guy was on a pod with Matthew Berry. Okay, it's a big time guy we have here sitting with us. We appreciate you not forgetting about us as you rise to fame. Hope to see you on ESPN.
Next time we'll do it on your pod.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But thanks again, man, for joining us. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. Remember, you guys can find us on any audio streaming platform, Apple, Google, Spotify, Anchor, and then also on our YouTube channel. Make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button so you can get updates on when we go live, when new shows drop. Don't forget, All In Politics is also on our YouTube channel and those same audio platforms. So tune into that stuff as well. And make sure you download the app. Update to the Google Play Store coming later this week. So make sure you guys download the app. It's going to make it so much easier for you guys to find our content. So make sure you guys do all that stuff. Thank you again for helping us out, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
See you guys.
See you.